The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. 1 second. Yeah, like, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to turn the computer on. Let me just walk over here and I'll boot up my computer because...
Oh, crap. Never mind. It's okay. I got another one. Leave it there. The cat will get it.
Oh.
Got a little tune here. A little song to sing for you.
All right.
That Nicole, she does something. She's really there. And does things.
Nicole Sandler Show, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Oh, Nicole, made you felt last year.
Trump said that he was really, really rich. So why is he playing whiny little bitch? He had 600 million cash, he said. But seems he pulled that figure from his head. It's clear about his money he's been lying.
Oh, yeah.
The same pitch used on banks he now is trying. He's begging idiot followers for dough. They'll send him some because they're too dumb to know. He said he couldn't be bought because he was loaded. But that myth has been recently exploded. I still view him the same, though he is poor.
Yep.
Since I thought that he was horrible before.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Mangy Fetlocks, everybody. Our friend Bruce W. Nelson. With he cranks them out. A couple of those tunes every day. You should find him on YouTube. Because literally every day, two new songs, and they're all like that. I love it. Yay for creativity. All right. Well, welcome to a Thursday, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler, and it is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. And today he brings along a guest. His guest is the current mayor of Jersey City. His name is Stephen Fulop, and tonight, he is delivering his 11th State of the City address. And if you're wondering, well, then how do you have him on the show? Because we end at 6 Eastern, and that's what time his speech is scheduled to begin. It's the magic of videotape. We actually taped the segment yesterday. So we're live now, but, at the bottom of the hour when we usually go to Howie, we'll go to the tape because we recorded yesterday morning so that Steve could be with us. And he's not a Blue America endorsed candidate yet. Steve Fulop is in the race to be governor of New Jersey, but that election day is not until November of 2025. Instead, Howie wanted to have him on. He had never met him before, actually, but he seems like a great guy. To talk about his endorsement in the Senate race. So in New Jersey, there is a seat up for grabs. Well, it's currently occupied by Senator Bob Menendez, who's got a few little, things going on. And he hasn't yet announced whether or not he will be running for re-election. I would counsel him, don't do it. Because the thing is, he would lose. The guy's under multiple indictments. He's not doing very well. In fact, Menendez is one of the things we discussed, and I know what we talk about because we recorded it yesterday. So that's coming up. I urge you to stick around and listen. Of course, there I am talking with the mayor of Jersey City, and it's the morning, because we did it in the morning yesterday, the morning after I saw Bruce Springsteen kick off his new tour. And by the way, sorry, I got a lot to go through today, but I just have to tell you this story. Here's the thing about Springsteen. As always, there were a lot of, there were kids, and even in the pit, you saw two little kids up front. I saw kids scattered throughout. There's all ages there. But, you know, we were sitting in the nosebleed section behind the stage to the left. I mean, they were just the worst seats. And I'll tell you, I'm a snob. I'm a concert snob. I've from so many years doing music radio, I was spoiled. I would never sit in those seats for any show other than Springsteen. For Springsteen, I was in the room. I was happy. But down the aisle from us, every time I glanced over, I noticed this family. And I'm sure it was a family. There was an older man and an older woman and an adult who I guess was their son, and it had to have been. So the thing I noticed about the woman is she had a baseball cap on with no hair visible underneath. And every time I looked over, the three of them were standing and dancing and enjoying, but in like a group hug. They were holding on to each other for dear life. And I saw the woman, and I know enough people who have been going through chemo and radiation that I know what it's like when you lose your hair. Knock on wood laminate, I didn't have to go there. But I see these people, and I came up with their whole story. There was a woman on the other side of the sun, who I'm guessing is his wife, and they went to the show together. But mother, father, and adult son were there enjoying Bruce Springsteen together and hanging on every word and every note and every song and holding on to each other. That's what music does for us. I didn't ask them because it's none of my business, but the script I wrote in my mind is that this poor woman is, you know, going through chemo, cancer treatments, and is probably not well. But boy, did she look happy. She was there with her husband and her son, and they were enjoying Bruce Springsteen on what very well might be his final tour with the E Street Band. I don't think Springsteen will stop performing and doing shows. You know, he can get up on a stage with just his guitar and play for 3 hours. So I think he'll keep doing that till he drops, but I don't know that they'll mount another E Street Band tour. So that's why, yes, I was there. And I think there are tickets available for Las Vegas this weekend, like inexpensive. Just saying, I'm not going, but, you know, you might want to. Anyway, all right, so on to other things. I never in a million years thought I would say this, but thank you, Merrick Garland. Thank you, Merrick Garland. Oh my God. So I get up this morning and you know what? I'm an idiot because I didn't pull out the specific points because I was going to play the whole thing for you. I'm not going to make you sit through 8 minutes of Merrick Garland, but here's the bottom line. Let's hear the beginning of it.
Earlier today, the Department of Justice, joined by 15 states and the District of Columbia, sued Apple in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey for violating Section 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Antitrust!
Over the last two decades, Apple has become one of the most valuable public companies in the world. Today, its net income exceeds the individual gross domestic product of more than 100 countries.
Wow.
That is in large part due to the success of the iPhone, Apple's signature smartphone product.
Yep.
For over a decade, iPhone sales have made up a majority of Apple's annual revenue. Today, Apple's share of the U.S. performance smartphone market exceeds 70%. And its share of the entire U.S. smartphone market exceeds 65%.
Okay, those are astounding numbers. And let me just say off the bat, when we're old, remember, when the computer era began, my first home computer was a Mac. It was an Apple. And I loved it. It was very easy. It was very user-friendly. I had stock in Apple, me being, you know, the idiot that I am. I had stock in Apple. It was like $35 a share. Oh, my goodness. And, of course, I sold it you know, before it split ever the first time. And yeah, but I had a little bit of it. So yeah, that's me with stocks. I don't have any stocks right now. So I'm not against Apple on the face of it. I was an early adopter. I like them. However, all right. So in my career, I was a music director of a major market radio station, and the music scheduling system that we used, it was something called Selector, company is RCS. They only worked on PCs. The software did not work on Apple. So I always needed a PC in order to do my job. So I just stuck with the PC platform and have had, you know, Microsoft-based Windows computers ever since. I played with, Linux for a while, but I'm not techie enough for that. I know it's supposed to be simpler, but it isn't. Anyway, so I'm basically a PC person. I have an Android phone. Now, I had a smartphone before there were smartphones. I told you I'm an early adopter. I had a, I forget what it was, like an M1 or something. And it was one of the first Android smartphones. And it had like a physical touch keyboard like the BlackBerry did for a while. And I loved it. And as they kept releasing better smartphones, I would upgrade. Now I'm a Samsung person. And now I have a flip phone. This is the coolest thing ever. Check this out. Of course, it's not going to. I kind of broke it. I break everything. But here, let me see if I can get the. See, I can't get the outside screen to work because I screwed up the button on the side. I'll show you. Anyway, but it's a flip phone. It's the best. I can answer it just by opening it like that. It's a Samsung. It works great. The problem is when I'm trying to text people who are in, who use iPhones, there's problems communicating. I would have people with iPhones text me and there it is. There's the front. There's a picture of me and Allison on the front of my phone, and text will come in. I don't even have to open it. I can get my voicemail, my phone, my flip Galaxy Z Flip or something. But it's like Allison, my daughter, has to have an iPhone. And sometimes the texts don't go through and the photos don't show up right. And, you know, and this is all by design.
Privacy and security for its users. For example, if an iPhone user messages a non-iPhone user in Apple Messages, the text appears not only as a green bubble, but incorporates limited functionality.
Uh-oh.
The conversation is not encrypted, videos are pixelated and grainy, and users cannot edit messages or see typing indicators.
Nope.
As a result, iPhone users perceive rival smartphones as being lower quality because the experience of messaging friends and family who do not own iPhones is worse, even though Apple is the one responsible for breaking cross-platform messaging.
Yep. Okay, so Al in the chat room says, I can't be a fanboy to Samsung either. I'm not. Believe me, I've got my problems with Samsung. The fact that my button on the side is sticking is really pissing me off. But it could be because I've been playing with resin lately. Anyway, no, it's just the lesser of two evils. Can I say that? They make decent phones, though David fights with his every day. But the point that I'm making is not that I'm a Samsung fan, is that I am in favor of open source, of software that works from one machine to another. My problem with Apple has been that everything they do is proprietary. Their stuff, their software, which is overpriced, doesn't work on the PC, doesn't work on Androids. They have to have their own and charge you more for it. And I think it's ridiculous. I think it's the emperor's new clothes. I think everyone who generically uses the term iPhone instead of cell phone, it pisses me off. I am anti-iPhone. I'm pro-Android. all the way. I don't care if it's a Samsung or a Nokia or a Motorola or Google or whatever. The fact is that all these other ones, you can use the software interchangeably. You can have, I've got a Lenovo laptop here. I had enough of the HPs, but when I said, screw you, HP, I won't buy another one of your machines, I could take all the software from that PC and put it on the Lenovo laptop. You see how that works? You can't do that with a Mac. Apple only works with Apple. And I just think, and again, it's so much more expensive. So unnecessary. So, and then I go on Twitter to sort of say, yay, you know, anti-Apple folks, rejoice. Finally, enough of me being, you know, looked down on because I use an Android. Well, screw you. It's Apple who's been fucking everything up. But I go on the shitter and I see people going like, there's nothing more important in the world. Thank you, Merrick Garland, for nothing. You're doing this instead of you name it. You think that the Department of Justice can only do one thing at a time? Let's applaud them when they sue a manufacturer over antitrust violations. When they make, you know, they make it. Oh, so I started telling you. So I have friends with iPhones who will text me and it won't show up on my phone, but it'll show up on my iPad, which I have so I can FaceTime my daughter because I can't video call her. Because I'm on an Android and she's on an Apple. But I get text messages to the iPad, used iPad on eBay, cut off hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Again, perfect example. You know, David needed a new one because we get the used iPads and eventually they're outdated and they, you know, they get obsolete. And we realized he could get a brand new Lenovo tablet for literally like an eighth of the cost of a brand new iPad. And the differences aren't that big. And in many cases, the Lenovo tablet is better. Again, just, you know, if you're trying to be one of the cool kids, I always say, march to the beat of your own drummer. Stop following the crowds. Unless they're the crowds, you know, holding the pro Trump or if they are the pro Trump people, you know what I'm saying. It's Thursday. All right. So that's the big news today. I was very excited to see that. Anyway, a couple more things. Yesterday, you know, I was happy to have a guest. I think she was great. Oh man, I did pull this video, didn't I? Now I don't know where it is. Hold on one sec. I got to see if I can find it. So yesterday I had this, what did I do with it? Today's the 21st, right? And I can't find it. Man, there's a state senator. Oh, David. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, hold on. I got something here too. Yes, David.
I would like to weigh in on what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
And that is the peripherals. If you recall, when we got my Lenovo pad,
yeah,
and I was looking for a case,
yeah,
there were like three,
yeah,
cases available.
Right.
Whereas if you look for Apple, there's 300.
Well, of course.
So
because more people use it.
Right. I think a lot of it is squelched, for lack of a better term.
Right. Right. Because they don't want you
so,
to.
So that cuts down on innovation and competition, which drives prices down. And again, innovation down as well. So
that's right.
Fuck Apple.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. That's what I say. Anyway, silly me. My producer needs to be docked pay or something. Because, you know, yesterday we did the whole segment with Fighting Back with Crystal Littlejohn. About how we fight back against the end of Roe v. Wade and you know the what they're doing to women's rights, and I missed an important story yesterday. There is a state senator here in Arizona who got up in front of the legislature and said, a few of you know that I'm pregnant. What you don't know is that I was just informed that my pregnancy is not progressing. It's not, it will not be viable. The pregnancy is not progressing. I have to get an abortion. Now, I'm going to share this, well, not tomorrow, because tomorrow's Marcy Wheeler and we take the whole hour. But I will find that for you and we'll talk about that next week, because I don't have it handy here. But what I do have handy are two more clips from yesterday's, you know, Biden crime family impeachment inquiry hearing in the House Oversight Committee, which is just, you know, a really, really bad joke. Actually, this is the one. I may have only have time for one. I'm going to play this one for you because Eric Swalwell, he's so good at this. You could tell there's a reason. He was a prosecutor in his previous life, in his pre-Congress life. And you'll hear why in this. So, you know, the Republicans brought this investigation of Joe Biden alleging all the things that Donald Trump has done, things that he is under indictment for, things that he will, knock on wood laminate, go to prison for, things that he will go to trial for. And in projection, in true projection form, they allege this of Joe Biden. But there's no evidence of any of that because he hasn't done it. But that doesn't stop them from their political theater. So Eric Swalwell, in his brilliance yesterday, turned the tables on the Republicans and the Trump crime family. And in this case, it really is a crime family.
In your interactions with the Biden family, which you've told us all about throughout the day, did you ever observe the Chinese government grant 22 patents to any of Joe Biden's children while Joe Biden was in office?
I did not.
Did you ever observe the Chinese government... did you ever observe Joe Biden ever own or operate any hotels while he was in public office and take millions of dollars from foreign governments?
I did not.
Did you ever observe Joe Biden employ any of his children or their spouses in the White House as vice president or president?
I did not. I can't speak to that.
Did you ever observe while observing the Bidens,
this is Bobulinski,
the Bidens install a family member to be the co-chair of the DNC?
No.
I'm sorry, ask the question.
Did you ever observe the Bidens install a family member to be the co-chair of the Democratic National Committee?
No.
I did not.
Did President Biden or anyone in his family take $2 billion from the Saudi government?
Not that I'm aware
of. No, that was Jared.
Did President Biden or anyone in his family get fined $355 million for tax fraud?
No, that was Trump himself.
Not that I'm aware of.
Mr. Parnas, as you've observed Mr. Bobulinski today and his fealty and dedication and loyalty to the Trump family, is that something you recognize as somebody who was also in that cult before?
Absolutely.
Is there hope for our man, Tony, here?
Very little, I think, until he hits a brick wall.
Ooh. And in your experience, on a scale of 1 to 10, how eager was the Trump campaign in your interactions to manufacture dirt on Joe Biden? 1 to 10, 10 being the highest.
10 plus.
Ooh. 10 plus.
10
Would it surprise
plus.
You, Mr. Parnas, that the Russians and in their disinformation campaign outlets have often cited Chairman Comer's testimony and allegations against the Biden family to make their own allegations against Joe Biden?
No, it doesn't surprise me because that's exactly what they want to happen.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Chairman, it's over.
It's over.
It's over.
The impeachment inquiry.
Time to back it up.
There you go. Thank you, Eric Swalwell. And now, this.
You a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with to Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, it is a Thursday, so Howie Klein is here, and we've got a special guest right off the bat today. Howie, why don't you introduce our guest today?
Okay, well, I actually don't know Steve, but I do want to say that I feel like I know Steve because a very close friend of mine in Jersey City, where Steve is the mayor, has been talking to me about him for more than a year. So, Steve, nice to meet you, and I'm happy to introduce you to our listeners. So I know that I think this is public. You're going to be running for governor, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I started about a year ago. I've been the mayor here for 10 years in Jersey City. We've led on a lot of stuff and going to be running for governor in 2025.
So before we get into that gubernatorial race, the reason why Nicole and I were really excited and wanted to have you come on the show wasn't because of that. It was because of your switch of endorsements in the New Jersey Senate race, away from the governor's nepotistic pick of his wife to the more progressive congressman, Andy Kim. And I was kind of hoping that you could talk to us a little bit about why you made that that switch and what the ramifications are for you. That's a pretty tough thing to do, to go up against the establishment. And also to tell us about your activity to help to get rid of that whole corrupt line system in New Jersey. I think a lot of our non-New Jersey listeners don't know what the line system is, and maybe you can explain that a little bit too. So there, I'm going to leave now, and this will be the end of the show by the time you're done.
All right, bye, Howie. Steve Fulop. Fulop, is that how we pronounce your name?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Fulop.
Fulop. And I've got your logo, Democrat for Governor 2025, up on the Chiron there. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But let's start with, you are mayor of Jersey City, have been for 10 years. You're about to deliver your 11th State of the City address.
Yeah.
And so, tell us.
That's tomorrow. And I mean, the city's had one of the best renaissance stories in the country. We've led on a lot of really progressive issues that the state has replicated. We are very, very proud of our accomplishments. It's the most diverse city in the country, generally regarded as such. So it's a microcosm of the country in many ways. And arguably, us in Newark are neck and neck with who's the largest city in New Jersey. So I have a lot to say about the electoral politics, particularly in a primary election from Jersey City. So that's kind of like the high level.
So do tell us about the switch of endorsements. I think that maybe Nicole wasn't listening when I was asking you the question.
No, I was, but I thought we'd ease into it.
Let me tell you a little bit about what that line is when Howie mentioned what the political line is, because I think to your listeners that aren't familiar with what we're referencing, it's important for them to understand. So New Jersey's ballot is unique. 49 states do it differently than New Jersey, in that when you go into the booth to vote, you as a voter may not realize that the ballot is skewed in a direction of a favored candidate chosen by generally one to two individuals in a county. And those one or two individuals could be an individual that's like a lobbyist, could have financial ties, personal interests, but they have the ability by law to set up the ballot in a way that skews it towards their favored candidates by 20, 30 points, according to Rutgers. So you might ask, how do they skew it? Well, what would happen is, let's say in the case of the U.S. Senate election, they would put Andy Kim or Tammy Murphy, whoever the favored candidate is, or whoever that is, in close proximity directly underneath Joe Biden. And so And then underneath, let's say the Senate candidate, they would put the congressional House candidates. And then underneath them, they would put the state assembly and the state Senate candidates. And if you're not a chosen candidate, they would put you in maybe column G or F in kind of this confusing manner. So what happens is somebody comes into the booth and they're predisposed to think that, oh, they see a column there labeled Democrats underneath Joe Biden, and they're likely to just go straight down that column line. And so whoever has those favorable positions is in a huge, huge advantage. So a non-line candidate, to put it in perspective in a little bit, has not won a Democratic primary off that county line in probably 20 plus years in New Jersey.
Wow.
And when I rep 20 plus years, it was an anomaly that actually happened in Jersey City, where you had an incumbent popular mayor running 20 plus years ago. So the line is very, very influential. And the process on how you get the line is generally dictated. Each county has its own set of bylaws, but by the most populous counties in a Democratic primary, it's generally dictated by one person's unilateral decision. And now there's litigation around this, and it's come to kind of a head where national media, you see the New York Times, even the Wall Street Journal, ABC, I mean, you name it, the Daily Beast, they're writing columns about this unique New Jersey system and whether the federal judge is going to throw it out next week or the following week. So that's kind of the high level kind of background on what we're talking about.
That's pretty wild.
Well, I would assume, Steve, that you made a lot of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that you made a lot of political enemies in the state among people who count on this for their power by coming out against it. Don't they hate you now?
Well, yes, they hate me, but it's important to kind of recognize in Jersey City, we run nonpartisan elections. So in the case of Jersey City, though, the entire Hudson County Democratic organization, when I ran for office, was against me and most of the state infrastructure. So when I upset them, that was kind of a unique situation. But had the line existed in the same format in a mayor's election, I wouldn't be here. So different than, let's say, a state assembly person or a state senator in New Jersey, I'm not beholden to the line. I've kind of earn my right to be here. And it gives me some flexibility to say what I think is the truth in this situation, but certainly the party influencers don't appreciate me saying it. And yeah, I certainly haven't made a lot of friends in this process.
So,
well, you're going to probably be running up against like a real machine hack kind of candidate, like either a Gottheimer, I'm guessing Gottheimer, who just is that. He's just like a corrupt piece of crap, sorry for the language, who is just completely beholden to the party machine. And that's all he is, and that's all he'll ever be. And I can go on about him for a while, but I won't. But you're even if they get rid of the line, aren't you still going to need some of these county bosses? And,
yeah,
doesn't Andy Kim need these people?
So I'll talk about me, and then I'm going to dovetail to Andy Kim because I think that's more relevant for today. But, you know, in the current landscape, you might have, for the gubernatorial election next year, you have myself, you have two congressional House reps, Mikey Sherrill, Josh Gottheimer, and then you have a former state Senate president, Steve Sweeney from South Jersey. All three of those people are clearly taking the lane of the county bosses and the county organizations. And so a change to the line would impact them. When I got elected here, we built a kind of a grassroots structure. So I'm familiar with doing it from the bottom up and kind of, you know, outworking that system. So for my candidacy, I've always thought that I'm not going to be in that lane. I was comfortable in doing it when I ran for mayor here, and I'm comfortable doing it when we run statewide. It's more work, but I think it's more sincere to who I am. And I feel comfortable that we'll be successful. Andy Kim, now let me say, the only reason that this has come to kind of the national attention, and I'm thankful for it, is because the governor overreached after the indictment of Senator Menendez while he tried to put his wife in as the senatorial candidate. And everybody thought it would be a fait accompli because the governor of New Jersey is the most influential governor by state constitution in the country. So the governor of New Jersey has the ability to appoint every position, including the attorney general, obviously all the commissioners, judges. They have line item veto on the budget. So there is structure in New Jersey that is tremendously influential. as I touched on earlier, the structure in New Jersey of who controls the lines, a lot of those people are lobbyists. So they're tied into the system that the governor dictates from a monetary standpoint. So after Senator Menendez was indicted, the governor probably overreached or definitely overreached with trying to put his wife there. And that kind of opens kind of the opportunity for people to see, why does he feel that he can do that? Will she make the case that she's a candidate independent of that? And at the same time, Andy Kim was amplifying, hey, this is an unfair process and we should take a closer look. So all of those things have converged to a place where likely the New Jersey political landscape will be changed forever if this federal judge rules next week that it's unconstitutional.
I just want to add one thing to what you were just saying, since it's probably impolite for you to mention it, which is that the governor's wife is a very wealthy, lifelong Republican.
Really?
And yeah. A lot of people don't believe in her conversion to the Democratic Party. Just throwing that out there for a little context for our listeners.
Yeah, that is true. So I didn't know that early in this process. I don't think anybody knew that. And the Star Ledger, which is our statewide paper of record here, or the widest publication, they asked me last week whether it's relevant. And I said, because she would say that Tammy Murphy would say that the Republican Party has left her. And my position is it's absolutely relevant that she was a lifelong Republican until her husband ran for governor here. That's when she changed her party affiliation, because she supported monetarily a lot of very, very conservative people up to that point. People that have had huge influence on Roe v. Wade, huge influence on LGBT plus issues. So it begs the question of, what prompted you to change your party affiliation, right? Okay. And is that a sincere reason? People do change, but the timing is very suspicious and her track record is very suspicious. So it is 100% a fair thing to question and be doubtful about the sincerity around.
I noticed that when Andy was and the wife were up against each other in the county conventions, he was, or any county convention where it was even like vaguely open and anyone could vote, he was winning. And then as soon as you got into the real boss dominated ones where they don't care about democracy at all, they're practically Republicans in that sense, then Tammy Murphy was suddenly winning. So, it just seems to me that she should just drop out. For the benefit of the whole state of New Jersey, she should just stop her race right now and let Andy be the nominee. But I'm kind of getting the impression that she's not going to. I had heard at one time that if she lost Bergen County to Andy, she would drop out because she was getting freaked out about how the whole thing was going. What's your assessment of how this race is going to go down and who's going to be the governor? I'm sorry, the senator.
Yeah, she's not going to drop out because it would be hugely embarrassing for her and the governor. The governor's term limits at the end of 2025, and he certainly has aspirations or is hoping to be more involved in national politics. And, a primary loss here would obviously send that sideways. So I don't suspect that they would drop out. Andy, has started the campaign with a very narrow path, and it's certainly widened as he's energized the grassroots here in New Jersey, and the national media has amplified this line issue here. When the campaign started on day one, I was an early supporter. You touched on this, as with the whole county here, of Tammy Murphy, largely because I thought that the campaign was headed in that direction. There wasn't going to be meaningful opposition. It wasn't worth creating a situation here that was problematic for Jersey City. I certainly didn't know her Republican ties in the past. And in 18 years, so I was on the city council for 8 years and 10 years as the mayor, I've never changed being a supporter for somebody once I make a commitment. So I don't take that decision lightly, but at the end of the day, I think you've touched on a point that is true in that the convention process here, county by county, has amplified the fact that you know, Andy is just more equipped to be the senator and more qualified, and she hasn't made a compelling case beyond the fact that she's married to the governor of New Jersey, which is not a valid reason. Right. And each of those county conventions has been more problematic, where they've alienated more and more people, and she's been reluctant to speak up on it. And those, for me, were deal breakers. And so, you know, here we are. Andy has a path, although it certainly is still going to be challenging.
Now, it should be said that this seat, the Senate seat we're talking about, is the one currently held by Senator Bob Menendez, who has not said whether he's running again. He's under multiple indictments, criminal indictments. Now, his son is also a member of Congress from New Jersey, right? And you and he have gotten into a sort of war of words, huh?
Well, I'm the only one in the county that's not supportive of his candidacy. And even though, you know, his values as a congressman, if you look at how he's voted for the last 2 years, most of his votes are consistent with how I think you or I would vote. The fact that he has been unwilling to say anything about his father's indictment, which has been beyond the pale with regards to gold bars, Mercedes, the fact that he has been unwilling to even comment on it means that he's a compromised person as a representative for us. I mean, it's okay, I guess, if you have a family member or a friend or somebody that's in an elected office, but you have to be able to represent your constituents first. And if you're unwilling to even say this person taking gold bars is a problem with 18 counts against him, to me, you're a compromised House member.
That makes sense to me too. And has Nancy Murphy, the current governor's wife, Tammy Murphy. Has she said anything about Menendez? I mean, is she going there?
So she has said she's running with Rob Menendez Jr. on the same ticket. So they're running together, in this coming primary. And then the entire state apparatus has called for, obviously, for Bob Menendez's resignation and for him not to run. I mean, he's a very stubborn guy, but, you know, Bob Menendez would say that the Murphys are only in that lane because they aspire to put Tammy into my seat. Now, who knows what's true and what's not true in that situation, but that's kind of where the rhetoric is with regards to the landscape here.
It's New Jersey, I guess. You know, I was mentioning before, it's New Jersey, and things, that's how they roll, I guess. But so you're stepping up to run for governor.
It's changed now. I mean, everyone has been, you know, that everyone says that, you know, New Jersey is one of the most corrupt, politically corrupt states in the country, whether it's Democrat or Republican. By the way, the Republicans have the same problem with this kind of political corruption that Democrats do. But that's almost like a truism. Oh, yeah, it's New Jersey.
Right.
But now, for the first time, people feel like, wow, this can change now. This really can change if they get rid of that line system and the whole boss establishment collapses, which it will if the line system is done away with, and it looks like it's going to. I mean, I'm just guessing, but I feel really good about it. New Jersey is going to change dramatically. Wouldn't you say that? Am I being overly optimistic, Steve?
No, you're spot on, because if you didn't have, like, let's just take a piece of legislation that's moving through Trenton, let's say in the last 2 weeks, because it really speaks to Andy Kim's campaign as well, even though it's unrelated. So there's a proposal there that would really gut the Open Public Records Act and make it really difficult for people to have access to information. Now, a normal voter anywhere in the country would probably say that's not a good thing from a transparency standpoint. And the activists in New Jersey are very, very amplified around this issue. But you scratch your head and you say, why would any state assembly person or state senator entertain such a thing, knowing that their constituents are opposed to it? And the reason is because the line would have protected them regardless of how they voted on something like that. So if the line is eliminated, as you touched on, you will inevitably get better quality candidates, more diverse candidates, and candidates that are more authentic and representing and caring about what their constituents' belief system is. So you ultimately get better government as a part of it, which I think is basically what you were saying, but I just wanted to outline how one is related to the other.
What's
it is what I was saying, and it reminded me of something else. Do you happen to know Sue Altman?
Yeah, of course. I've known Sue for a very long time.
Great. Speaking of great candidates, tell her that you've been on the show with us, because we'd love to have her to come on as well. For the listeners who don't know, Sue Altman is a great progressive champion, a real fighter, and she has been for a really long time. And she's running for Congress now Junior. What's his name? Tom Keene Jr.
Oh, wow.
An awful Republican freshman.
Another former governor of New Jersey.
Fun, right?
You know, this nepotism thing down pretty good here in New Jersey. Yeah. So Sue Altman, to piggyback on what Howie was saying, is Sue Altman is one of the most important races in the country for Democrats to pick up. It is entirely winnable. Prior to Tom Keene, it was represented for 4 years by Tom Milinowski, who barely lost his race. You had some gerrymandering there, and they basically sacrificed Tom Milinowski to strengthen or embolden Mikey Sherrill and Josh Gottheimer's district. Now, Tom Milinowski...
When Steve says they, he means the Democrats. Uh-huh. So they weren't crazy about Malinowski's independence, and they took Democratic voters out of his district and put Republican voters in instead, and let him just go down and lose to Keene Jr.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
And so Malinowski worked really hard regardless of that situation. I think he lost maybe by, 1-2%. It was a very close election. So basically, Sue Altman is running against Tom Keene. Prior to this, she was the executive director of the Working Families Party for New Jersey. She's been at the forefront of a lot of issues, and it's a very winnable seat for us. So it's something, if your listeners are interested in, obviously they are, in targeting some of these really great candidates, Sue Altman would be a huge addition to the House, and winnable.
So tell Sue that you were on with me and Nicole, and that we would like to have her come on as well. And then tell her about your experience talking with us.
I have one more question about the line thing again. So what's going to determine it? Does it go on the ballot? Do the voters get to decide the ballot design? Or
So it's wild. So 4 years ago, a group of good government activists, 2020, along with Rutgers, filed a federal lawsuit. And it's been kind of meandering, slowly drifting through the court process. And the judge has been kind of slow to take it up. It survived a bunch of opportunities to get it thrown out. So the judge clearly saw some merit in it, but didn't really show a willingness to engage. This is a federal court case around voters' rights and constitutionality of what New Jersey is doing. When Andy Kim filed a lawsuit saying that there'd be irreparable harm for him in this immediate primary and he needs an injunction, it's kind of expedited the whole conversation around where and how New Jersey operates. It's amplified everything. So the judge, what he said was that he would listen it was actually on Monday. So on Monday was all one day of testimony on both sides. All the clerks from New Jersey were the defendants. So the county clerks who do the ballots. Andy had, experts from around the country saying that they could redo the ballots. Block voting, like every other state has it, is the right way to do it, et cetera, et cetera. The judge listened to the testimony and, he said that he'll render a verdict at the latest by April 5th, because that's like the date of ballots going out. So we're within 2 weeks of major change for the New Jersey political landscape, one way or the other.
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you one other thing, Nicole, which is crazy for your readers, just kind of amplifying how crazy the story is, and I referenced this earlier, that in New Jersey, the attorney general is actually appointed by the governor. So it's a little bit different than most states. So we have an appointed attorney general as opposed to an elected attorney general. So it's usually somebody that has a close relationship with the governor. In the case of New Jersey, our current attorney general last term for the governor was his chief counsel. So there's a very, very close relationship. And on Sunday night, Monday being the federal hearing on this issue of the lines, on Sunday afternoon, the attorney general for New Jersey sent a letter to the court basically saying that they would not defend the constitutionality of the line because they view it as unconstitutional and impacting voters. So, which is a crazy thing for the governor's attorney general to be saying.
I was absolutely shocked when I saw that being reported. I didn't understand what happened. I mean, the governor must have flipped out.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't talk to me clearly about this stuff, but I would assume that the answer is yes.
So we will have an answer like within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you're basically 2 weeks away from the judge basically saying that the lines are unconstitutional. We have a practice that has happened in New Jersey forever, which kind of encourages a lot of the issues around corruption that New Jersey has had. Say, so that would change the landscape dramatically, or the judge saying there's not enough evidence, or it is constitutional, or I want to roll it into the broader federal case, and that would have a huge impact as well. So yeah, we're within 2 weeks of this, maybe less.
But if they give the ruling the day before the ballots go out, the ballots are already printed, so it won't go into effect until the next election?
So no. I mean, Andy's obviously asking for an injunction. The defendants who are the county clerks are basically making that exact argument, Nicole. They're saying we don't have enough time, we can't change it. Andy had election experts who say there definitely is enough time to do it. The machines are sophisticated enough that you could change it pretty easily. But, you know, the defendants, the county clerks, are saying we don't have enough time to do it. That's their exact defense, really.
Wow. Wow. Pretty wild.
One other thing, and like it impacts beyond the county lines. I mean, it impacts everybody who listens to this across the country, because New Jersey is a very, very safe Democratic seat in the general election. And when you have the Senate that is so close, it's really important that that seat stays as a Democratic seat. Now, New Jersey has shown in the history an ability to elect Republicans. I mean, we were talking about Christie earlier,
yep.
Christine Whitman.
Yep.
So if you have a unpopular spouse of the current governor, and the activist base on the Democratic side is not enamored and resentful in the general election because Andy isn't successful or the line still exists, you could see clearly that seat going in a different direction. And Andy has made this argument publicly, and I think it isn't an argument that's spoken enough about, but super important, because we can't put that seat in jeopardy. Like, it's really important to everybody in the country that that seat stays a safe seat, that that we don't have to spend a ton of resources to protect, because we've got to win other seats. So it's really important for everybody.
Okay, there's a lot at stake here. Howie?
Yeah. I agree. There's a lot at stake, and I think things are going in the right direction. I feel very, very, very optimistic that this is going to be a good thing, and I have a good feeling about Andy winning this race as well.
Yeah, I remember when you brought Andy as a Blue America candidate in his first run for Congress, which wasn't too many cycles ago, was it? We've been doing this for a while, but...
Just a couple.
Yeah, yeah. And I always think there was a 60s pop star named Andy Kim who had a hit with a song called Rock Me Gently. And every time I hear his name, I think of that not very good song. It's a different guy.
I love the fact that you know that, Nicole. That's crazy.
Howie and I both come out of the world of music, so everything is a music reference to me. I hear Andy Kim and I think Rock Me Gently. Right. It's a bad song, really bad song.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we know each other for decades, going back into the music business. That's how Nicole and I became friends originally.
Small world, and now we're both trying to make sure, you know, we remain a democracy. Jamie Raskin was in town last weekend, and so that's what we've been talking about here. And to keep people like Chris Christie out of office. He was at the Springsteen concert last night. He's a groupie. He's better served just following Bruce around and letting, hopefully, Steve Fallop be the next governor of New Jersey.
And I agree.
There you go.
Steve, I actually, since Nicole brought up Jamie Raskin, I would really recommend, I'm recommending to every candidate that they watch the way Jamie addressed a crowd of activists in Phoenix this weekend. In fact, Nicole made a tape of it and put it up on YouTube. And it's just absolutely amazing how well he's able to convey the kind of, you know, the Democratic messages, which aren't necessarily that exciting unless you say them the right way. And he said them the right way, and he was really, really good. I'm telling all the Blue America candidates just to go to YouTube and find that video and watch it. In fact, I'm sending it out to a lot of them, and so that they can.
Yeah,
I will check that. It's on the YouTube page.
On YouTube, at Nicole Sandler's my YouTube page, and it's posted there. I put it up a few days ago. 2 days ago, actually, the event was Sunday. It's already gotten over almost 16,000 downloads in 2 days. Oh. It's resonating because he's such a great speaker. It was off the cuff, no script. It was just Jamie being funny and talking about what's important right now, and it was great.
Yeah. I mean, when he started talking about what women can do in the election, it was just so inspiring. I'm not even a woman, and it was so inspiring. I mean, the way he talked about Biden addressing the Supreme Court judges at the State of the Union address, and then what that's going to mean in terms of women being motivated to go out and vote. He just did it in such a way that you don't normally hear candidates do it. So that's why I've been recommending to other candidates that they watch it too.
Yeah.
Jamie's incredibly intelligent. And, you know, very, very, he knows what he's doing. I've known Jamie since before he had ever run for Congress. I'm on the board of People for the American Way, and he was our outside counsel.
Oh, I didn't know that's how you knew him. That's awesome. Yep. He, the comments on the video, too. He's really, he has touched something in the American public because the comments are off the wall, just one after another. Great American, smartest member of Congress. So, yeah, the speech is a good model for any candidate because it worked.
Meanwhile, Steve, we hope that you'll come back on the show with us when the governor's race is really kicking off, and we can spend a half an hour talking to everybody about why Josh Gottheimer is the worst member of Congress.
Yeah, I'm happy to get on and talk about all of those things. So definitely.
Great. Well, we're recording this actually Wednesday morning because you tomorrow, Thursday, are delivering the State of the City address.
Yeah.
Right when the show ends. So people can go now, turn on the TV, and if you're in New Jersey, I'm guessing, and see the mayor of Jersey City, future governor of New Jersey, deliver his 11th State of the City address.
I've got to ask you something, Steve. Did you have anything to do with bringing, what is that called? A new museum from Paris, I think, is opening up a branch in Jersey City. It's one of my favorite museums in the world. Did you have anything to do with bringing that over?
It was my idea, and we solicited them. We bought the property, the Centre Pompidou. So for those of you listening, it's the largest collection of modern art in all of Europe. And it's obviously in Paris, it's in Brussels, in Shanghai, and the North American location is going to be in Jersey City. And, you know, Jersey City being a mile from New York, we have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder always. And, you know, I always view that we should have the best of the best and a lot of education opportunities for our kids and really developing relationships as a global community in a global city. And so, yeah, I'm happy that you knew that, Howie. And yes, I was very involved in it and continue to be very involved in it.
Well, I'm a huge Francis Bacon fan, and if I'm anywhere near Europe, I'll always make a trip to London to go to the Tate to see some of the Francis Bacons there. But the second biggest collection of Francis Bacons in the whole world is at the Pompidou Center. So as soon as I heard that the center was going to open up a museum in Jersey City, I thought, oh, my God, I'll be able to see Francis Bacon's that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, we have full access to their collection from Europe. I mean, it really is a great thing for Jersey City and New Jersey. And, I mean, we're excited about it, to say the least.
Cool.
When is it opening?
So we finished the financing. We have a meeting with the governor's office on the operations next April 8th, so 3 weeks. Construction documents finalized this summer, and construction starts. We'll open end of 25, early 26.
Just in time for
great.
Your
so you, when you cut the ribbon, you'll governor. Be the governor.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's not the plan. I was hoping earlier, but I'll take it anyway.
That works. All right, Steve Fulop, thank you so much. It was great to meet you, and be in touch. And
Don't worry about that. Got a little not the desk setup going on here. I was trying to be careful on that. But anyway, look, I'll talk to you guys soon, and I appreciate you guys taking the time.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, we're glad you came on. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Steve.
Right.
Bye, Nicole.
And that does it for this Thursday edition of the Nicole Sandler Show. Steve Fulop, a name to listen out for. He's pretty impressive, I think. Howie Klein will be back next week. I'm Nicole Sandler. I'll be back tomorrow with Marcy Wheeler for another edition of Empty Wheel Fridays. And yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So we'll see you then. Peace out.